This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley.
You can't put a kid on the street with a 3,500-pound vehicle. Who's going to win? The vehicle's going to win.
That was the voice of Eduardo Rodriguez testifying before city council this morning. His 15-year-old daughter, Gabriella, a student at Western Hills High School, was killed on September the 10th by a hit-and-run driver while she crossed Harrison Avenue to catch a bus. In the first 4 months of this school year, 13 students have been struck walking to and from Cincinnati Public Schools. Why this rash of accidents involving students, and what can be done about it? To discuss these questions, we are joined by WCPO transportation reporter Pat LaFleur, Cincinnati Board of Education member Eve Bolton, and Cincinnati Council member P.G. Sittenfeld. If you would like to join this discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. Welcome, everybody, to Cincinnati Edition. Good to have you
here.
Thanks,
Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Eve, this was the first day of school in Cincinnati Public Schools after the holiday break. Were things different at Dater or at West High this morning? Were there any changes that have been implemented?
No major changes have been implemented yet, but they are in the works. And as we speak, I know that the administration is meeting not only with the schools there and other schools where there are similar issues and problems, but also in efforts regarding budget from the city and the kinds of things that the city might be able to do. And I know Councilman Sittenfeld has been able to talk to Duke Energy about the lighting changes that are needed. But it is top of the list as we have our first new board meeting tonight at 6:30, as well as a retreat on Saturday that safety update and safety visioning, if you will be one of the two topics.
PG, I guess I had the impression that Duke and the transportation department were going to be able to very quickly implement some new lighting at Dater. Has that not happened yet?
No, so that did happen. Pat, you ended up being there. Was that maybe 10 days ago? And I want to be honest. I mean, as board member Bolton has shown great leadership on this and Pat through his excellent coverage, I mean, there are a lot of things that need to be done to make sure that whether you are a senior citizen trying to get from one side of Hyde Park Square to the other, or a high school student, you know, walking down Ferguson to go to Dater or West High for class, we want school to challenge kids, right? We don't want crossing streets to be challenging. That should be easy. And frankly, being a pedestrian should even be joyous. So it's one small thing, but this is sort of an indicative, I think, anecdote, Dan. We're sitting in a committee hearing, and somebody from the Department of Transportation and Engineering, in response to myself and others saying the lighting along that corridor is very dim. I mean, it just was like you can barely see. It was so dim. He said, well, maybe we could fix it. Maybe we couldn't. And if we could, it would take 4 to 6 weeks. And a bunch of us sitting on the dais, our eyes kind of like jumped out of our head. 4 to 6 weeks. This should be a simple change. And literally, students are being hit. And it's tragically, as you heard from the father of Gabby Rodriguez, some students have died. So I walked out of that meeting and I called Amy Spiller, who's the market president for Duke Energy. And to her credit, she got it immediately. And they dispatched their team to go out there and install LED lights the next day. That, to me, is the level of urgency that all of this stuff. And I realize if you're reconfiguring an entire road, it's going to take more than one day. But when 13 students in this short period of time are being hit, another young woman, Kenya Joy Austin, I've been in regular touch with her mom, Asia Allen. She said her daughter feels traumatized, doesn't want to go back to school. And how could any of us blame her? So the lighting is one thing. I'm glad that, you know, I was able to nudge Amy Spiller and our department to get on it quickly. But that needs to be the approach across the board.
Pat, you were in a Law and Public Safety Committee meeting this morning.
That's right.
My understanding is, PG, you weren't
able to
be there.
I go to the committee somewhat frequently, but I'm not actually a member of that one. So
Pat, what was discussed there? What was decided there, maybe most importantly?
Sure. So as far as decisions being made there, there wasn't much as far as action taken by the committee. The meeting, I think, today was called more to get an update on about 9 or 10 possible improvements that could be implemented outside Dater High School and West High. One of those was the LED lights that have been mentioned already, those have been implemented. I believe some center lane pedestrian crossing paddle signs have been replaced. Those were installed and then damaged. So those have been replaced. And then there was a list of about 8 or 9 other items, ranging from, yeah, here we go. We've got them right here. Anything from installing new crosswalks to kind of the last item is a little vague, traffic calming measures along Ferguson Avenue. That could be a whole host of things that could go on. And, you know, the implementation time could be a matter of weeks or even a matter of years for some of these things. So today's meeting, as far as student safety goes, was kind of an update for the council members on what DOTE is working on. Now, we also got an update on the Gabby
DOTE being Department of Transportation and Engineering, part of the city.
That's
We're
right.
not talking about ODOT from the state institution.
Correct. This is all city level. We also got an update from Cincinnati Police on the Gabby Rodriguez case. They're still looking for the driver. Their description of the vehicle is pretty vague. It's a white four-door sedan that they're looking for. They've interviewed more than 30 people who might have been involved or associated with a vehicle that fits this description, but they still don't have a suspect.
Eve, to what extent is – I mean, there's been a lot of attention because of these 13 accidents on sort of Western Hills University High School, on Dater, but to what – extent is this a system-wide issue, and what's the school board doing in terms of analyzing, trying to get out ahead of this before it becomes a problem someplace else?
Well, Dan, I'm glad you asked that because and making the difference between the state and the city. One of the reasons that we have trouble at all of our 15 high schools, some more than others because of their location, is that the city, for the last many years, at least 7 that I know of, has refused to participate in providing those traffic calming kinds of lights and crosswalk repaints and the paddles in the center because it's not required by the state of Ohio at high schools, just like crossing guards are not required at high schools. So the city has been very reluctant. And frankly, it's good that the city under this particular leadership, and we really appreciate it, is sensing this urgency. This goes all the way back to 2011 when the city and the district put together the first district-wide Safe Routes to School and won $1 million grant, only of which only about $400,000 was spent, and then we lost the rest of that money. But our greatest effort—
Lost it because it was withdrawn?
Because it wasn't spent in the time that was needed to be spent.
Okay.
And so one of the things we've asked for is at least forget what the state requirements are, but help us on your jurisdiction, and we've had council people being very receptive to this, at least put the infrastructure in that we need around our high schools. So that's very, very important.
So just so I'm clear, you're drawing a distinction between elementary or middle schools, and I know all these terms, don't worry about the technicalities, but below high school level, they are required to have flashing lights, other safety issues. High schools are not.
Right.
Now, in this district, we have gone to high schools being 7 to 12, which means there's even younger kids in high school.
And it also changes the transportation system because the 7th and 8th grades can be on the yellow bus, and we are completely dependent upon the metro system for the transport of our 9 through 12s. Now, that will help us make some systemic changes, whether the buses are parking on which side of the road or what have you. But right now, from the city's perspective, we really need them to help us figure out and put in place those things that do impact the safety around the schools. And
Dan, can I chime in on that?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I think Eve is touching on something that, you know, there's – I don't know. I'm not sure that Pat's particular position and his vertical at WCPO would have existed maybe 10 years ago. I think there is a lot of reckoning going on. And, you know, I use the word a pedestrian revolution, but there is literally decades of policy where what's been prioritized has been efficiency. How can I get someone from A to B? And look, we're all stakeholders.
As quickly as possible.
As quickly as possible. Good addition. And often those people might not necessarily be stakeholders in the city. They're passing through the city. And I would say efficiency is great, but even a higher than efficiency, let's prioritize livability. And literally in the way that you design streets, that you put these things together, that you have your policies, you are incentivizing, do you want someone to speed or do you want someone to want to live there? And, you know, if you open up three lanes of road and it's a one-way street, you're kind of saying to people, put your foot on the pedal a little bit more. If you can literally design where you're saying, look, there are mothers pushing strollers and seniors crossing the street. So I think there is a global sort of set of policies that Cincinnati specifically, but also society as a whole, saying it's not just about people behind the wheel speeding from A to B as quickly as possible.
Well, one of the things that Eduardo Rodriguez said this morning was that Harrison Avenue is like a race course.
Yep.
And Pat, you were talking about there's been some discussion about traffic slowing,
calming.
What concretely does that mean? Literally concrete.
Well, we have a really recent example of one of these traffic calming measures being put into place in Northside when the city decided to change the parking rules along Hamilton Avenue through Northside's Central Business District. Previously, there were parking restrictions in place to open up more travel lanes in each direction during the morning and evening rush hours. People postulated that that was resulting in people speeding and more crashes occurring. Well, over the last 6 or 7 months, those parking restrictions were removed, so people could be parking along either side of Hamilton Avenue at any time of day. What we saw as a result of that after 7 months was a 70% decrease in rush hour crashes from 2017.
So we're not only talking about pedestrian accidents.
Right,
but
just crashes in general. So the theory that I believe is being demonstrated so far to be true is that reducing the number of travel lanes in each direction is resulting in a reduction of crashes. Whether that involve a pedestrian or not. So that would be one example of a traffic calming measure.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. People idolize the idea of neighborhood schools where students can walk from home to school. But what happens when 13 students are struck by cars in one semester? To continue our exploration of how to improve pedestrian student safety, we are joined by WCPO transportation reporter Pat LaFleur, Cincinnati Education Board of Education member Eve Bolton, and Cincinnati Council member P.G. Sittenfeld. If you'd like to join the discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Pat, we're talking about – I've cited this 13 number several times. That's related to – students, young people going to or from school. What's the scope of the larger problem if we just look at the danger for young people in city and city streets?
Sure, yeah. So that 13 figure would be students who were walking to or from school and they were struck by a vehicle. But if you dig through some of the city's data, which, by the way, not a lot of people know, is freely available and updated almost daily on the city's website. It comes in a Excel spreadsheet form, but I was digging through some of those numbers last week, and in 2018 alone, there were around 100 individuals under the age of 18 involved in crashes, and those individuals were pedestrians at the time of the crash. So we're talking about 100-plus young people involved in crashes like these while they're walking through the city of Cincinnati.
Okay. Puts it even in a starker context and whatever. We have a call from a listener, Doug. And Doug, you have, I think, a point that relates to the Westwood area that you would like to make, right?
Yes, I would.
I'm a neighbor of Westwood School here on the corner of Montana, Epworth, and Harrison Avenue, very close by to all of this. And early in the school year, I was really dismayed because the 20-mile-an-hour flashing signs for a very busy grade school were not functioning during either school coming in or letting out. And I found it took me, I'd say well over a dozen phone calls over the course over a week in order to get anyone's attention. Even the members working at the school seemed to have no idea that this was going on. It seemed like an awful lot of oversight was missing when it came to noticing those sorts of things.
And I want to repeat this slightly because Eve, this is really directed at Eve Bolton, or I think Eve would have something to say about this, and her headphones aren't working properly. Doug just called in from Westwood. He lives next to Westwood School, which is not either of the two schools we were talking about before. We're talking about an elementary here, Westwood School, and he was saying that the speed lights, the special speed limits, 20 miles an hour, I guess, weren't working. He thinks about 12 calls in a week and couldn't get any response, and people didn't know about this. What do you say to that?
Well, hopefully he called the city and not necessarily the school district from a jurisdictional standpoint.
Well, let me find out about that. Doug, are you still on with us?
I am.
Did you call the city or the schools?
I called the school. I called the city. I called District 3. I just kept calling anyone I thought might have any influence over knowing who would be the proper person to talk to.
Okay. So he called the schools, he calls the city, he called District 3.
Good for Doug.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do. And the reality is it takes, as PG mentioned earlier, it at least from engineering standpoint, it's people are thinking in terms of decades instead of minutes or days. And the reality there is Westwood particularly now, not only do you have the Dater High School and West High, but very within a half a mile, you have the Dater Montessori, which has 800 little people in it. And we're soon to be opening in August, Mercy High School. So there's a concentration within just 3 miles of thousands of students in any number of schools. So Doug is right to call it in. I know that we submit those work orders to the city, I would say, on a regular basis, and at least that's what I've been informed.
Yeah, Doug, thanks for, as the board member said, you did the exact right thing. What I can take responsibility for, call my office directly, 352-5270. One anecdote, I went to worship yesterday at Christ Emmanuel Church and then was driving out for a meeting and was driving down Langdon Farm Road with a brand new team member of mine. Shout out to Jasmine Coaston. This is her first day in the job. And we were going down, and there was a portion of the road on Langdon Farm where literally the yellow line in the middle of it was gone, completely invisible for about 50 feet. So I said, all right, let's get on that first thing tomorrow, get someone out there striping it. So again, I mean, our office tries to be incredibly responsive, always invite constituents to call with matters of public safety feedback or anything else.
Yeah, and I want to point out here, PG is not just grandstanding here. Elected officials do constituent service. That's part of their job.
A huge part. Yeah.
And people sometimes don't recognize that. So that's exactly what's happening. And I want to, with Eve, you not only have been at Cincinnati on the Board of Education, but you taught at a suburban district for a long time. you and I both know how long that is. And is this also a suburban issue, or is this just a city issue?
It's both, but it's much more extreme within the urban environment, largely because of where the high schools and the small schools, the elementary schools, are located. In most suburban areas, you're going to be finding that the schools are located, for the most part, in residential. Whereas in the urban environment, many of them, very frankly, more than half of our elementary and high schools are located on major thoroughfares by design. Because it, as you know, Dan, as a historian, it dates all the way back to Northwest Ordinance. And so where the community was first founded, that's where that square for the school was. So I don't think that we fully appreciate the need to have the urban environment as informing how we do what we do. I would also suggest that our own people need to be able to drive safely and access the schools and drop their kids off. But even just outside this building on Central Parkway, there was a hit and run last month. And fortunately, we found out who has done that, and the child is recuperating. But this is certainly a systemic issue, and it is citywide. It's the urban environment in part, or if I could say, many years ago, Ray Bradbury, the great sci-fi guy, was asked, how do you come up with these ideas? And he said, are you kidding? Just walk down a street, and when you know that cars are more important than human beings, then you have plenty of material for any sci-fi fiction.
Yeah, that's it. Dan, we've now hit our quota of references to the Northwest Ordinance on Cincinnati Edition. I know you like to hit one per show, right?
Well, he's leaving soon,
yeah,
so
I
wanted to make sure
shower
we had
the historian with relevant references.
Or irrelevant data. So we have another call here, and that is from Garrett, and I'm afraid I'm going to – Garrett, we're having trouble with Eve's headphones, so I may have to repeat your question, but can you ask what you want to here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, there's been a whole lot of attention given to engineering and things that the city can do, but is there any curriculum to help the kids kind of know how to get around safely?
Okay, so the question is, Eve, is there anything that the schools can do to educate kids about safety and in related to – and is there – I'll extend that question a little bit. Has there been anything done because of this rash of incidents this fall inside the schools?
I think it's a great question and a great suggestion. And I do know that particularly in our high schools, there's been a recommitment, re-effort, re-energizing the effort, if you will, to stress to our kids, to our young people, our teenagers, about the safety regarding not only getting to school and walking to school, and some of them walking in very dangerous neighborhoods, but walking across the street where there's a crosswalk, exiting or dismissing from school in a way that is not crazy or out of order. Those sorts of things are being done. But I also say, you know, it's been a long time, 1,000 years ago, since we had driver's training in our schools. And indeed, even in part of driver's training in the old state curriculum, there was the practices and the safety tips regarding being a pedestrian. So those sorts of things used to be an old school that now need to come back.
Pat, at this council meeting this morning, council committee meeting this morning, following some tweets that were coming out of that, there was some question about whether the police were willing to enforce speeding laws in the school zones. And there seemed to be, anecdotally, you said something, Chris Wetterich, who's also a regular on this show, also tweeted something about this, that anecdotally heard that police are reluctant to enforce speeding.
Well, that's a whole can of worms.
And yes, it is. That's
I'll pick a little bit up of that. So in speaking on and off the record with certain individuals who are related to this issue, I have heard that there is some apprehension to enforce traffic laws if it will mean that the driver they have pulled over could have open warrants against them and that could generate more work. Now, I don't have any data on that being true. Again, this is all anecdotal.
But isn't that a good thing to have gotten somebody with an open warrant?
Well, of course, that would be the logic. But I think when we're talking about enforcement as a part of this conversation, I think it's clear, and the data has shown this, and even CPD has acknowledged that over the last decade, there was a pretty stark decline in traffic enforcement stops by Cincinnati police. Numbers show that indicatively. Now, over the last couple years, police have begun to put more resources back toward traffic enforcement. And if you speak to any of the top brass at CPD, they'll tell you that the rise in violent crime in the middle of this decade was a chief cause in drop in any sort of drop that you could see in traffic enforcement, because resources were being allocated to that other cause.
Higher priorities.
Correct. So now, you know, we spoke with Assistant Chief Paul Newdegate a few months ago, right before Cincinnati police launched their traffic enforcement blitz. It was a 2-week program. And, you know, he was very clear. You know, we've heard the community. We know that this is a big problem that a lot of people are noticing, and we're responding. So, you know, police resources are always going to be limited, and enforcement can get tricky. But at the same time, it seems like a pretty simple solution on the surface.
And I mean, make no mistake, if people are being hurt, let alone killed, it is a public safety issue. And you hear me talk, and Pat hears me talk ad nauseum about these three E's: education. People need to take responsibility, both as pedestrians, but especially the responsibility that comes with getting behind the wheel of that car. Engineering, as we spent a lot of the show talking about, that can be lighting, that can be signage, that can be the design of roads. But enforcement, having people crack down on bad actors who are going 40 through a school zone when young people are going across, it's going to take all three to get this right.
Dan, could I just interject two things about that? One, we have fantastic resource officers in our high schools. Thank goodness, a great relationship with PD. But you get the impression, having watched any number of dismissals this year particularly, that the police officers that are there and in their cars are actually surveilling our children rather than enforcing
traffic. No, it's got to be there to protect them, no question.
And the reality is they need to be helping us regarding the traffic piece. And that's what we need to emphasize.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for being here today, but also point out that this isn't just a problem with school-age children. After the break, we're going to be joined by an expert on national trends that are driving the spike in pedestrian accidents. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.